apologize. I might be a little bit controversial. I might offend some people by saying something that not everybody may agree, but there's no time to be nice and put everything within context. So within the context of today, I need to be specific and just go for, I'm pragmatic. So how do we make it work? How do we close the gap? How do we, what else can we do? Shadow falha. That means, that's Portuguese for closing the gap. And falha, that's my language, Portuguese. And falha in Portuguese can be translated as gap, but it can also be translated as a failure or failing. And I think it made me think about it. And I think there's definitely a failure in the system when the need for participation is identified, has been identified. The right for participation has been granted, but obstacles in the way, whatever they may be, stop it from being implemented in a meaningful way. So, and I'm sure that if I continue to speak Portuguese now for the rest of the next 10 minutes, we could have lots of fun. You know, you could have some fun trying to see whether you picked up some words. I could teach you some. Young people always ask me, teach me some really good swearing words or some really good ways of insulting people without them knowing. You know, it could be quite good fun, but would it be very productive? I mean, would we achieve very much? And I think that's the theme from today. Language is important, not just that we choose a language that we all understand, but that actually, if we're passionate about participation, we need to translate what we want to say into a language that other people will be interested in just as much and will see the benefit and the value of it. And that's it, that's all I'm going to say today, so that's the beginning and the end. So the meeting in the middle. So although we're thinking about the same, you know, the whole idea is that my experience, my observations through the years of teams and services throughout the country that I've been involved with at different levels, and particularly in this field of sexual abuse and sexual exploitation, where multi-agency responses are required and are essential, this has shown me that language, or by that I mean a shared understanding of what is meant by participation, of how and why it should be implemented. But, interestingly, like Jenny was saying, alongside an understanding of other key concepts like rights, what age do children's views matter? Perceptions of uncooperative victims or undeserving victims, young people, that are far too hard to work with or to engage. Fears of, you know, working with young people, the dislike of young people. I don't know about you, but in practice, I hear a lot of people say, I don't even like young people, you know. So it's a reality. And this room, probably we could go and say, yeah, participation is, we know that already, but we're not the ones with the money, we're not the ones with the power to implement it, so we need to be translating it into a way that people understand. A few years ago, I used to kind of really think that organizational, there's a gap between this academic discourse and practice, and it is affected by major interference. And these interfering factors is what I want to think about a little bit today, because they are the main reason for disparity between both realities. And I used to think that organizational values, or even professional and personal values, were one of the main factors that impacted on the translation of the two realities, on the translation of participation in theory to practice. And although they do matter, and they can be one of many influencing aspects, I'd like to propose that most interfering factors can be brought under priorities and accountability, or in another way, priorities for which services and individuals are accountable. If we can address those interfering factors in the middle, I think we'll be in a better position to close the gap a little bit and stop failing young people. So within this framework, I will explain why children are there, don't worry. We all know the current social economic environment that we are operating with, and increasingly services are under huge pressure to perform better, faster, cheaper, but still maintaining the same level of protection for a growing number of children and young people. Now, I'm saying this, it's interesting because I'm hearing my own organization is going through a massive restructure at the moment with big redundancies and everything. And this is, again, sort of rhetoric that we're using. And under these circumstances, choices have to be made. And ultimately, you prioritize that for which you will be made accountable, that for which you could be deemed to be failing. that for which will bring serious consequences. That those become your priorities. So when implementing participation under this pressure, it is only too easy for the process to take over the purpose. If participation is to happen, we'll make it happen this way, rather than why and what we're trying to achieve and what is it that we want. And therefore, giving the opportunity for children to speak up in order to influence may mean that you find that you need to respond. It takes time, it takes investment, it can be time-consuming, resource-intensive, and even force a change in the current direction of travel. And that's got implications. So all this goes against operational targets and increased service demand. And that's the reality of practice trying to implement and close that gap. So I'm only using this example because I think it's one that everybody can identify. I'm not saying that our statutory social worker colleagues are the worst at implementing participation at all. I was just involved in recruiting quite a big team locally, even though I'm in the voluntary sector. I was helping them recruit and train the new social workers for working in child sexual exploitation. But immediately, they're coming in with really good values and principles and ideas of how they want to work. But the targets and the limitations of how they're going to work is very, very different. And choices are already having to be made and how they're going to operate. So how do you protect yourself as a service or as a manager or as a practitioner from the constricted way of competing pressures and demands? You know, again, you focus on that priority, but who's the deciding what is the priority for the service? The true priority setters are not those doing the work, the practitioners that we've talked about having to be empowered, but also they're not those who reflect on values or best methodologies or best approaches. I'm sorry, you are not as part of research. The priority setters most of the time. The true priority setters are those who determine targets and measures for scrutiny and accountability. Those with the power and power shift. And at the moment, power has shifted a lot towards economic constraints. And we need to acknowledge that if we want to make progress now, rather than wait until things get better again. So, for participation, in my view, to be truly meaningfully implemented, its benefits need to be articulated in a series of languages that make sense to the target setters and budget holders. The benefits of participation have to be articulated from a political gain perspective by its capacity to reduce social scandals, crisis situations that put you under the spotlight for all the wrong reasons. That tends to get listened to. The benefits, participation is already benefits of participation need to be articulated in ways that demonstrate cost savings that make economic sense, that ultimately will save time and resource investment. Participation is already well articulated from a rights perspective. Its social value must be translated to economic value, into process improvement, into time saving, enhancing protection, and avoiding further significant harm to children. That's the language that a lot of the target sectors will understand, and that will for them enhance the value of participation. I'm not saying that people are in the jobs because they don't believe in the rights of children, because they don't care about children, but actually they work within the constraints that they work. And we need to speak the same language if we want them to get to do what we want them to do. The challenge then for us is to make participation become one of the key priorities that simply cannot be dropped to the bottom of the list as a nice luxury or something we would do in an ideal world, but that is just not realistic. How can we do that? How can we articulate participation in such a way? So I'm not asking, and I know that probably, you know, people are thinking, well, we shouldn't do that. I'm not asking whether we should have to do it. I totally agree participation has the value in itself. It's a right. But in all its different ways. But the issue is, if we want to make progress now, if we want to see change happen now, we have to be clever as the advocates of participation in how we sell it, in how we make it appealing, in how we show it to be useful to more than just immediately the children, but to just services that want to be better in practice. It's got to have a wider value. It's got to have a different, something that people will see, yeah, the game is immediate and the game is for me, and actually I can add it to my list of very tight priorities right now. And the moment those priorities are set, then the teams, the authorities, the practitioners on the ground, the agencies, they'll know they'll be accountable for it, and therefore they will try and make it happen and make it happen in a more meaningful way. So the question is, can we do it? You know, can we advocate participation in ways that translate? Can we articulate it in ways that are meaningful to others as much as they are meaningful to us? Well, thank you.